Offering hope to children is the heart of the mission from our guest today. Very excited to have Lieutenant Mitch Harrington, retired. A good friend, have not seen Mitch in a while since I've been retired. And we're going to talk about Mitch's Harrington for Hope and Camp Hope. We welcome to the show a genuine hero, good friend, Mitch Harrington. Welcome, Mitch. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you, George, for having me.
I'm excited. I'm sure most of your audience knows you've been a public servant, done well, and then you had an episode happen in your life, changed your life 8 years ago, which you saved some souls in your police and fire, and you know, I'm gonna let you tell the story, but I'm gonna, okay. But. The good news is, I love this show because it's about the who, and I think I know a lot more about my friends than I do, and we'll be talking. I'll say, I didn't know that. So I told you off air, I've got a tough job. You can already tell. I got to listen. It's your show. So, Mitch, let's just start with the old Billy Graham thing. Start at age birth. Tell me who Mitch Harrington is, where you're from, your formative years, and anything you want to talk about growing up and going on. So, welcome.
Okay. Well, again, thank you for having me. Tough thing to talk about yourself.
Oh, it is. You know? No, it is. It really is.
but, yeah, I was I grew up in South Carolina.
Okay.
Up to about the 8 years old.
Okay.
My mother remarried and moved to Crossville.
Okay.
We were there for a few years, and then – what I would call my formative years, I grew up in Sparta.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Went to White County High School. Graduated in 1984. Not long after I got out of high school, I went into the military, into the United States Army.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of people in my life that inspired me to do what I do and what I did. First off, I had an uncle that was a police officer in South Carolina. You know, seeing him in his uniform and his patrol car and listening to the stories and all that, you know, I was like, man, that's a cool job.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. I loved listening to him. Excuse me. I also had an uncle that was in the 82nd Airborne Division, did several tours in Vietnam, 3 Purple Hearts.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy, he was – something else. And listening to his stories again the things that he did really kind of inspired me to, A, want to go into the military.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did that, I went in, I was an MP, a military police officer. I was stationed in Fort Hood, Texas for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Vicenza, Italy, where I worked for the Criminal Investigation Division Drug Suppression Unit.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, I had an absolute fantastic time over there.
Wow, yeah.
Hey, it's a beautiful country. And then I loved the work that I did over there.
Mm-hmm.
While I was there, and I kind of knew that I wasn't going to stay in, mm-hmm. that I wanted to get into civilian law enforcement. And so while I was there, I sent an application to the Cookeville Police Department. And Chief Tom Moore, mm-hmm. who was the chief back in 1988, probably to 90, wrote me a letter and actually called my boss over there and said, hey, tell me about this kid, you know. And
mm-hmm.
When I came home, he told me to contact him when I came home. So I did, and he immediately brought me into the police department and had me fill out an application and all that.
Wow.
And, in October of that same year, I got hired.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the police department, I guess, really is kind of home to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it started my life here in Cookeville.
Sure.
Because I had to move, you know, I had to live here when I got hired. But the people within the department, the people that you meet,
mm-hmm.
Such as yourself along the way, man, it's just been a true inspiration to who I am and the things that I've accomplished. A lot of ups and downs while I was in there.
Sure.
You know, I don't care what anybody says. The life of a police officer is hard.
Oh, I now It's amen. Hard. Amen.
Absolutely. So the respect I have for those that are getting into it, it's immense.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because I don't think they know what they're getting into when they get into it. You
maybe
know?
That's a good thing.
That's exactly right. But it's a hard life because, you know, you take a 21, 22, 23-year-old guy or girl, put that uniform on them, put that gun on them, put that badge on them.
Oh.
The responsibility.
I was going to say the same word. Responsibility is enormous.
It's the weight of a vehicle. And what people don't realize is the things they see that form them for the rest of their lives, haunt their dreams. It's tough. Yeah. It's tough.
Yeah, you see things that most people will never see. A lot of things that people, the average citizen, myself included, will not see what you see day in, day out.
That's exactly right. And I mean, to stay in that job as long as I did and as long as others there do and see those things, have to deal with just, you know, the very worst of people. You know, that's the bad thing about being a police officer. Very seldom do you get to interact with people when they're having a good day. You always interact with them at their worst. Either their worst day or their worst behavior. Or
whatever the case that's right. That's right.
And you know it's tough. So you got to have you kind of got to build a little wall that protects you from the things that you see and the things that you experience. And you know, like the last year or 2 years of my time there at the police department, man, I saw things that I still can't get out of my head.
I understand. You know, I understand.
It's tough, real tough.
Yeah.
And there's those that were there with me that are still there doing fine.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, just day after day after day, year after year, man, it's a tough job.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate the city of Cookeville and the people that guided me, that helped me along the way, were true inspirations, you know, and people that I'll never forget.
Oh, yeah.
However, sometimes there's things that happen that really can change the course of your life.
Oh, and, sure.
And I had something like that happen to me back several years ago, 8, 9 years ago.
Yeah.
We were at Tech working the solo concert. It was the spring concert.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my shift was there working, and we had to go into work that night. I was on night shift, and there was a house fire call came out, and I had just left the Hooper Evelyn Center, and I was very close. Was the first officer or first emergency responder there. Dispatcher was on the phone with an occupant of the house. She was bedridden, couldn't get out of the bed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Her husband was in the house also. She didn't know where he was at or what had happened to him, because she couldn't hear him or
sure.
He wasn't moving around or anything. So I made the decision to go in. I thought, you know, I can get in there and
just take care of it.
Get her out of that bed and drag her out of there if I have to, before this place burns to the ground. And the fire department was still several minutes away. When I got there,
they
left the building yet, you know.
Yeah. You had to make a decision right there.
I did, and you know, people have questioned whether it was the right one or the wrong one, but it was what was right in my mind at the time. I could hear this lady inside.
Oh.
It was
a God thing.
It was horrible.
It was right there. You're right there. You're facing. You had to make. You made a decision.
Yeah.
And thank God you did.
I did, and I went in, and as soon as I stepped inside, the house literally exploded. The husband was already deceased.
Okay.
He was burned. He was on the couch there by the door. I never even made it to her bedroom door before the house just went up in flames. And I mean, so fast that, you know, there was no way you could get in or out of that building. So I caught on fire. I mean, from head to toe.
Oh, sure, sure.
And I was rolling around on the floor trying to get this fire out. And I could see under the flames, I could see the couch by the door, and I knew the door was just to the left of it. So I got up and I ran towards that door, and I ran into literally a brick wall. The roof had partially collapsed in front of the door, and I couldn't get out. Luckily for me, two of my guys that worked for me were at the back door soon thereafter, steel frame, steel door, and they kicked that thing open after 14 kicks on it.
Good Lord.
They had no clue that I was inside.
Oh, okay.
No clue.
Okay.
But when they got down on the ground, they were yelling for the lady in the house to come crawl towards them. They couldn't get in there to her. And they shined a light up in there and happened to see the patch on my shoulder of my sleeve.
Woo.
And crawled up in there and grabbed me.
Yeah.
And so I was severely burned. They sent me to Vanderbilt. Unfortunately, and the fire department was able to get the lady out finally. After 4 days, though, unfortunately, she died also.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
She was in a room next to me, or across the hall from me, actually. And she died, which was just horrific. This,
I understand.
Survivor's guilt.
No, I don't understand. Yeah. I hadn't been there, so I don't know.
Survivor's guilt is something don't really understand. But it's tough, and that's been the toughest thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
But after 3 or 4 weeks in the Vanderbilt burn unit, I was able to come home, and I had to start thinking about how do I get beyond these burns, which, as you see on my hat, is one of our mottos, our motto.
That's a great segue into our next segment because you have wow. All I can say is wow. God bless you. And we're going to come back in just a moment. Mitch Harrington on a real life adventure of hope, of life, of death, and in the future. Back soon. Back with Mitch Harrington telling the story of a servant who was called upon to do some things in the line of duty and performed. Let's go back to that because I think we were talking off air. You know, you train all your life for certain things like that, and then all of a sudden you don't get a chance to sit there and let's see, time out, let's take a break, and we'll weigh it, and you responded. So God bless you for that. But talk about what was going through your mind and did things. You know, I always say, people say it slows down. All of a sudden you see your life going before your eyes or whatever. Just if it's not too painful, let's go there.
You know, this is almost funny, and I say that. With no disrespect to the situation.
Yeah.
But when you really, you know, at the moment when I really thought, this is it.
Oh, sure.
I'm done.
Yeah, yeah.
I had almost given up. You know what I was thinking about?
Mm-mm.
Thought, boy, my mama's going to be mad at me.
Oh. Yeah.
Weird thought
but
from a grown man, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I understand. I understand.
But
no, I don't. I mean, I comprehend. Maybe I.
So I always say that, you know, it's funny what goes through your mind. But yeah, I mean, it was bad. And then, you know, when I was in the hospital and they take all those bandages off and the skin graft surgeries and all that, you know, and I look in the mirror, I was like,
who is that guy?
How am I going to deal with this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it took a long time. You know, I was off work for a year almost. 8-9 months, I guess. And, you know, all that time you're sitting at home by yourself and you're going.
A lot of time to think.
A lot of time to think about bad things, you know.
Oh, yeah, your mind. Yeah.
So it's tough. And all the first responders out there, firemen, EMTs, the police, everybody, they're kind of expected to have the same thing. Just like on that wall right there is a light switch. You're expected to have a light switch. You got to act, respond, perform in very, very trying, traumatic incidents that happen, unfortunately, to good people, you know.
Time is of the essence. And
yeah,
it is. You don't have time. You just
have to make those
quick decisions, hope they're the right ones, but yeah.
And then by the same token, that switch goes the other way too. You got to flip that switch off. And 10 minutes later, you might have to go help somebody that's got a flat tire or.
Yeah. Yeah. You go from the ultimate
to just to, mundane.
Yeah,
somebody got to have that switch, and you cannot
turn it on, turn it off. And I don't. That's hard to do.
So it's a tough job. All the first responders. It's just a very, very tough job. But you know, with my deal, once I got, well, let me back up just a little bit. While I was in the hospital, I met a nurse there. Her name was Rebecca Limley. She was the director of a camp called Camp Hope.
Okay.
And when I got to talking to her, I saw some pictures out on the wall. My dad was wheeling me around in the wheelchair, and I saw some pictures on the wall, and I was like, what is this? And we were reading about Camp Hope, and it was a camp for burned children age 6 to 16. And it was just for the burned children, not their siblings or anybody else. And I said, who runs this thing? And one of the nurses told me, and said, well, she's here. And I said, man, I'd love to talk to her. So she came and talked to me. And what I found out about Camp Hope was it was funded through donations. Vanderbilt doesn't pay for that, although they support it and they sponsor it.
Do a lot of good things, but they
don't. But a lot of the cost of it is through donations.
Okay.
And I told her, I said, well, how do you get your donations? She said, well, you know, we've got donors here, there, you know. But me and my family end up paying for a lot of it usually.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, really? That's no good. And I said, I tell you what, if I get out of here and I can do anything to help you, I'll try my best. So with the help of a lot of friends, when I came back, we came up with Harrington for Hope. Mm-hmm. Harrington, obviously.
Excuse me. Yeah, sure.
Is me, and then the Hope is Camp Hope. And so what we did is we started a little fundraiser. We started it down in Baxter, at a little place called the Docks down there.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We were just doing like auctions and motorcycle ride. And,
oh, sure.
We had a couple bands and whatnot. And then each year this thing grew, and it has grown and grown and grown through the help of a lot of people. My wife, Kim, is on our board.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Tindall is our assistant director, mm-hmm. who's just invaluable. And then there's just several other people that are on our board of directors and our volunteers that, man, they step up every year. And, you know, we have done so well with this thing that we're able to give Camp Hope usually $25,000 or more each year.
Wow.
When we're at camp, because four of us this year went as counselors at camp. I've been 4 years now, 5 years, 6 years, something like that, as a counselor. And so each year on the last day, we get all the counselors together, and we vote on the child that best represented camp, was most helpful to the others, was most helpful to the counselors, because we need a lot of help while we're there. and then we bring those two kids to Cook. Well, we give them motel rooms. We pay their fuel money and food and all that. We bring them to Cookville for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the day of our event, which, by the way, is October 11th this year,
okay,
at Maxwell Farms down in Baxter,
mm-hmm.
Nikki and Blake Grogan own this venue down there, and they're gracious enough to let us use it for this event. But we bring these two kids in, and we will give a boy and a girl. We give each one of them a $2,500 scholarship from our organization.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a new plan called the Family Assistance Plan, where we are financially assisting their moms and dads.
Sure.
While the children are in the hospital. Sometimes after they're out of the hospital, we've actually paid light bills and rent and things like that for these families that have not been able to work, because their child might be in the hospital for a month. It might be 6 months.
Sure.
And then there they are not working. So it becomes kind of an issue for them financially. So we try to help them be able to pay those bills. So I think that I've took something that was horrible.
Yes. Is it?
The family, you know, the family of the two people that died in that fire have been our biggest supporters.
Oh yeah.
They don't blame me, thankfully.
No, I get it.
Yeah. And they know that I did what I could, you know. But there's been a lot of people, a lot of businesses in this town that have helped us financially along the way. And it's been a real blessing.
I was going to say, you turned something with the man upstairs, the guy there. Little did you know when you were standing there making a decision where this decision was going to lead.
Yeah.
And how you've taken something with the Lord's help and other people's help and have turned, here am I, send me, Lord. I've been accused of having a faith-based show here. We don't back off from that, but no, we agree with that. But the story is already, we're just getting started. We're going to come back here in the next and really pick it up right there, and let's talk about what is happening. Let's talk about Camp Hope, and let's talk about the future, and see. But it's a story of it's a story hits a lot of nerves, and
it does. And the thing about Camp Hope is, as a counselor going there, I ask every kid, "How'd you get burned, man?"
All the different.
I could write a book, and most of it is either A, an accident, or B, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, their parents wasn't taking care of them the way they
should. I understand. It can happen in a minute.
It can.
Hold those thoughts. We're coming right back with Mitch Harrington. Back soon. George Alford with Mitch Harrington here, recapping a truly unbelievable event in his life, in our community's life, in our fire department, police. And we're going to pick up, Mitch, where we left off and share. You know, you've been through this horrible situation, and you dealt with it. You didn't have time, you didn't have time to think about it, but you did it. Talking about a massive house fire that had some real consequences for. It touches a lot of souls, doesn't it? It touches a lot of people.
Absolutely.
It's not just the people. So just pick up and share with the audience in the aftermath of that, or what happened. What are we leaving out? What does your audience need to know?
Well, what I really wanted to say was this. First, I wanted to tell you a little bit about Camp Hope, because
that
is really what we work for as the Harrington for Hope Board of Directors and volunteers. Put in a lot of time all year long. We do multiple events. Matter of fact, we just did a golf tournament 3 weeks ago at White Plains. But Camp Hope, again, is a camp for burn survivors, children ages 6 to 16. And we use the William Ridley 4-H camp in Columbia, Tennessee. It is an awesome place. Anybody that's in 4-H probably been there. And I mean, it's got swimming pools and cabins.
Wow, okay.
And all kinds of things for these kids to do. And we go there and we let them be children, let them be a kid.
Again.
Because some of these children are burned so horrifically that they won't leave the house, much less go to a camp somewhere. But this camp, they know that when they go there, everybody has got burn scars.
You're right there. You're among friends.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And so there's no ridicule about how they look. Some of them are, you know, missing ears or you know, their hair is burned off, you know, and just, I mean, they have horrific scars. You know, so I ask them, and again, I ask them, you know, how'd you get burned? They like talking about it when they feel safe.
And how often do they really feel safe in the outside world? Because
not very, but I will tell you this, and I really want people to understand this. A kid that age, and well, anybody that has some sort of visible handicap, whether it be an amputee or a burn victim, would rather you come up and ask, if you really want to know, would rather you come up and ask them what happened than to whisper and point and all that stuff behind their back.
I understand.
You know? And these kids are that same way. They like it because they get to talk about what happened.
Let's deal with it.
Let's
direct.
Deal with it.
Let's don't.
It's therapy for them.
Yes.
It is for me.
Yes.
You know, so I know it is for them.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stories, George, is unbelievable. I mean, a lot of child abuse. A lot of just parents not
paying attention
to what the child's doing.
Yeah. How things can get out of hand.
But let me tell you this one story from last year, real quick.
Okay, sure.
We had a child. It's a boy. We met him because we used our family assistance plan to help his family.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to know him and his mom pretty well. And we invited him to Camp Hope, which he has, loves it, and he's one of our best campers. But his story, and he lives in Crossville, but his story was just amazing. So last year at our auction, he had his grandmother and a bunch of her friends take him to the beach on vacation. And they said, well, we'll go, but when we go, we do quilting, so you'll have to help us quilt. So he learned how to quilt.
Wow.
With his grandmother and her friends. He made a quilt while he was there. He brought it to our auction last year, and it was probably the highest dollar item we'd ever sold. It went for some ridiculous price, just because of the story that went with it.
Oh, it's all, yeah.
But he got up there, and he told his story. He had his dog with him, and he got up there and told his story. He was at a friend's house. A friend threw gasoline on a fire. It immediately erupted and burned him pretty significantly from the chest up.
Wow.
A lot of damage to his neck and whatnot. And he didn't know what to do. He's on fire. He takes off running, which, you know, and I know is the worst thing you can possibly do. And his dog that he had with him, I think it's a Labradoodle or a Golden Doodle. It's one of the two. I apologize for not knowing that.
It's...
But the dog runs him down and tackles him and gets on top of him.
And snuffs the fire.
And he's putting that fire out. Oh, trying to. The dog catches on fire.
Oh.
From him being on
fire.
So the dog gets off of him and starts rolling across the yard. This child sees that.
And he imitates.
And he imitates it.
Oh.
And they both get their fire put out.
Amen.
Saved his life.
Amen.
And he had that dog there with him. It was.
That's a God
thing. And that was at our event last year. So we try to get these kids to do that, to our scholarship recipients. Come tell your story.
Tell your story.
Because we get amazing stories like that. Amazing stories. But the things you learn and the things that inspire you because of our involvement with this camp, life-changing.
How many are you in? How many? Of course, it would vary from year to year, season to season, but is there a number that you're helping a certain? There's no limit. You just...
Well, I'll tell you this.
And how large is your terror? How large do you focus on the Upper Cumberland? What, you know?
We focus on Middle Tennessee.
Okay, good.
However, we have children from West Tennessee, East Tennessee, Southern Kentucky. We've had a child from Northern Alabama, but it's pretty much just around greater Nashville area for the most part. But what we do is the burn unit keeps records of, you know, their patients who would fall into the category of 6 to 16. And we send out invitations to those children every year. Now, when I say we send out invitations, we send out hundreds. We usually get 40 or 50 respond back.
Okay, but there's a real...
That tells you a story right there that these kids are like, nope. And it takes a unique something to happen sometimes to get these kids. There's another child in Crossville that I met at the barbershop and at my father's mustache. I was getting my hair cut over there.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And they came in there and they got me and said, Mitch, we got a kid back here in the back we want you to meet. I was in uniform. I was on my lunch break or whatever, trying to get a quick haircut before court or something. And I went back here and I met this boy. And man, his face is burned. His head's burned really bad. He's got burns all over him. His was from his burns were from a criminal activity, and I mean, he suffered because of it. So he was there getting him a hairpiece made. And I said, you ever been to Camp Hope? You ever heard about it? And his mom, his adoptive mother, said, oh, yeah, we've heard about it, but he won't go because he's afraid everybody will make fun of him. I was like, oh, dude. I was like, I tell you what, if you'll come to Camp Hope next year, I said, I'll be your counselor.
That's right.
And he's like, you will? And I said, absolutely. So we sat there and we got to know each other. We took some pictures and all that. And we exchanged phone numbers and we reached out to the family again. And absolutely, he came to Camp Hope the first year. He did so well at Camp Hope that not only did he make the 6 o'clock news on Channel 5.
Wow.
Interviewed on there and did a fantastic job. But the next year, he became an ambassador for Vanderbilt University Medical Center.
Ooh.
And now... Oh, my. Let's see. I saw him. Somebody sent me a picture of him at Ace Hardware. There's a poster of him at Ace Hardware, and I'm not sure what it is he's helping them sell. And the running joke is, you know, because people that's been burned can always make fun of each other. Maybe selling fire extinguishers. I don't know. But he's at Ace Hardware on a poster there. So the child has done really well, And his mother will tell you to this day that that a lot of that is attributed to Camp Hope.
Making a difference.
It makes
making
a difference.
Making a difference to someone's life.
One more real quick.
No, you got it, man. You got it.
We had a little girl came that was nonverbal. She came with her foster mother, brought her, burned really bad. It's a child abuse case. I mean, I say burned really, she burned really bad. Mm. A child abuse case, a beautiful little girl. This little girl is just absolutely gorgeous. We love her to death. But she came, she was nonverbal. Mom says she never talks. She said, yeah, you know, if it's not that she's not capable, she just won't. She's got some sort of block in there.
Yeah, shock, something is, yeah.
Yep, something shocked the system to where she
something has gone haywire.
Yeah. And so, however, by the end of the week, this child was talking so much that her mother came and started crying when she picked her up and said, "What have you done with my child?" It was just amazing. I mean, it was amazing because for the first 3 or 4 days of camp, we didn't hear a word from her. I mean, not one sound.
Wow.
And then one day, man, she lit up and started talking. But we have story after story after story of things like that. And what makes it possible is people here in this area and as far around as Middle Tennessee that each year donate to our program. And, George, I'm here to tell you, man, I hate asking people for anything.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I'm not that guy, you know.
That's right.
But we do. And people have been just absolutely amazing at what the things that they've done to help us. It's been incredible.
Well, you got a great story to tell. It's a great time. We're getting in the last minute or so. Let's talk to people who want to be involved, people who want to contribute. Anything you want to share? This is a good time for a good old fashioned commercial.
Okay, well, I can do those.
I bet you. I know you can do that.
We, man, we do a huge auction. Kevin Burchett is our auctioneer. He volunteers to help us every year. It actually provides the funds that we need to make this thing go. So auction items are awesome. People want to donate. If you just want to donate, Harrington for Hope on Facebook, HarringtonForHope.com, or I'm sorry, HarringtonForHope.org. It's our website. You can go either way there. And you can also get my phone number off of Facebook, so you can call me personally if you want to. Sponsors, business sponsors, we love having those. So anything that you want to do to help would be so appreciated. And it's changing lives. It changes children's lives because you never know. Tomorrow, it might be your child.
Thank you. People's lives, man. Great story. Great story. Back next time.